Guys and girls, welcome back to Vegpreneur. Today we're interviewing Midday Squares. They don't have a sign yet, but the point is they sold 30,000 bars in, I believe, 75 days. That's like 17 bars an hour, 24/7. So let's go right in. Outside in the snow. Listen, for the guys that, for the two people actually, two guys and girls who don't know about you, what are you guys all about?
Honestly, we're, you know, I think at the end of the day, we're a functional chocolate bar company. When we were looking into doing this, like seriously, for real, you know, we had all felt that over the years, if you look at the way the market was progressing, there was nobody that was really giving love to chocolate. So if you look at like, everything that's out there in terms of functional protein bars, the Lyras, the RXs, and I got mad love for all of them because I still eat them. It's all chocolate flavor, and chocolate flavor is very, very different than chocolate. And then you had this huge movement that was happening on the real chocolate side of a lot of different chocolate companies coming out that were doing some sustainable packaging, some ethically sourced stuff, and that was all great and dandy, and I'm big fans of those too. But they were focused completely on chocolate.
Right.
And there was like nobody had taken the two worlds and had a baby with them. And, you know, growing up an extreme chocolate lover, it was like, I feel like when I go to one side, I get no love. And when I go to the other side, I get the love I need, but I want that in between because I hate chocolate flavor. Like, I hate chocolate flavor. It's not real chocolate. And so my wife over here, we weren't even wife. We weren't even dating at the time, but
when you started,
yeah,
no way, okay,
yeah, lived with each other, we were roommates.
All three, or
no,
just
Nick. No, I wasn't with him.
No, that's a. I mean, we get at the family thing after because
sure.
I've met everybody in the family before I met her, which is a weird story, and that was by pure chance. But she was in fashion, and I was in software, and I would actually invested in her fashion company, and at that time. She was going through like a crisis of where she was going to put her office and didn't have space, so I told her to just move into my condo and basically make the condo a production facility for her fashion. And at that time I was obsessed with chocolate in the afternoon, but I was eating a lot more high sugar content chocolates.
Junk.
Do you have any brands or do you want to mention?
Yeah, O. Henry. I'm a massive O. Henry fan.
You feel this is an expression of O. Henry or like influenced
no.
by it or
no? No.
Because
no.
I create this.
This is an
it's your recipe.
This is an expression of her, and I'll let her get into that.
Yeah, so pretty much I've always loved cooking. I'm a big foodie at heart. I love everything. So I play in the kitchen all the time. When I lived at home originally, my mom hated it. I would make like crazy messes, ask my brother, like I'd be in the kitchen for 5 hours and the dishes would stack up. So as soon as I moved out, I really started opening up and creating. So when he was eating all this junk, like I said, we weren't even dating, he was just my best friend. I was like, Nick, we need to cut that shit. Like, there's so much good food out there that you can eat that's gonna satisfy your craving.
So
you
know? I'm like, okay, prove it.
Yeah.
Like, make me something. Like, if you want me to stop this, make me something.
So, like, at the beginning, I took, you know, a bunch of dates and a bunch of this and a bunch of that, and I created this, like, brownie, healthy brownie, that I was making for him, and he was just, like, for you.
Right.
And he completely put the other stuff in the garbage. I haven't seen you pick up an O. Henry since.
So, actually, funny story, we were on the way to Toronto for our packaging show, and I had not had a Reese's Pieces cup in so long.
Yeah.
And I was like, we were out of stock, and I'm like, oh, I just need a Reese's Pieces cup. I had in the car, and it tasted so artificial because once your palate like kind of acclimates
right.
I had to throw it out because I couldn't even deal with
well,
it.
Well, we cut refined sugar from our lives, so you know, like
completely.
So you know, like instead of having jams anymore, we take strawberries, we you know put it on the stove, right. We let it you know soften, and so we really change our lifestyle. And
I was 30 pounds. Yeah, I was 30 pounds heavier.
Yeah, Nick was 30 pounds heavier, and I created this product for him, a version of it.
Right.
Obviously, it wasn't this when I was making it for Nick, because you know when you're in the market, you need to hit certain nutritional things, protein, sugar count, calories, function. Right? Someone's not going to buy a product that has 40 grams of sugar in it. And dates, as much as they're healthy for you, they do have a lot of sugar.
Right.
So, once we decided to, you asked how we started this. So, yeah, I pretty much was making this for Nick.
Yeah, that's exactly
it.
That's where it started. Before I go further.
The journey of commercializing was at a whole other journey, but that's how it started.
Yeah. And you literally came out of nowhere. I was like, what is happening here? Because basically your stories are like the game, right?
Yeah.
You have like, I don't know how many stories at a time. I know Daniela was doing it, KG MTL was doing it, a few other people were doing it. I was just like, okay, this is probably just another chocolate bar company. Then I look into the ingredients and I'd like to get into that a bit. Like,
sure.
So you probably get the questions about like why yak and syrup, like what are the functional benefits?
Can I take the yak on part?
Sure, please.
So I'm like a crazy, I'm crazy into biochemistry. Really, really into it. And I was on a couple of Reddit boards and I was pricking myself for a long time to take my glucosamine levels in the morning. Yeah, I asked my doctor to give me the thing for the scripts and everything. And I was on a chat board, and this was like after she had introduced me to it, she was kind of using it and I was going through all the stuff and everybody was talking about this syrup that doesn't spike your blood sugar levels. And there's a few we don't go to necessarily get into all the medical benefits, but the idea of not spiking your glucosamine level has always been something that's fascinating. Because you know that those crashes that you feel, and your biochemistry is largely relying on that aspect of the body. So for us, when we were looking into it, I was, you know, everyone was talking on the boards that Yakon syrup does not spike your glucose levels.
Like not at all.
It's a zero glycemic index.
It
flows through the body. It's a flow through. So it doesn't actually get processed in that way. And so basically I started pricking myself and started actually checking my blood meters after it happened, and it was really working. And so we started incorporating Yakon syrup to pretty much everything. Like when she would make these pancakes in the morning, it just became our replacement syrup.
It's also really good for Chinese.
Yeah.
It has like, you can make Chinese dishes with it.
Okay, no way, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
And actually what I thought first was like coconut nectar.
Yes.
Is there a link? How similar?
No,
are they?
Coconut nectar we've played around with.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure down the line you will see it in our product dev. But like I said, we really just had an attachment to the Yakon syrup.
And coconut syrup is a glycemic index hit, so
you will feel.
So many of the customers, and a lot of people are not familiar with Yakon syrup, so a lot of our crew love like messages us on Insta and saying, you know what's crazy is I don't crash after, and that's, there's a twofold answer to that question. One is a lot of people don't realize that cocoa is a derivative of caffeine, so it's like a caffeine medium, and so it's got a derivative of caffeine in it, not the typical caffeine. That's why they're not required on chocolate bars to tell you that, you know, the caffeine percentage the way coffee is, but it's a different derivative of it that gives you an incredible amount of energy, and then when balanced with the proper sugars, you have no crash because your glucose levels aren't spiking and then coming down. And so at the end of the day, you know, those are the reasons why. And unfortunately, a coconut nectar doesn't provide the same benefits, but it has amazing flavor profile.
Amazing. Right. Yeah. Caramelly. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Right, if you just look at the texture, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even the flavor.
The flavor.
When mixed with certain things really creates this, like, crisp caramel taste.
Yeah.
Right.
Taste.
Right. Nice. Cool. Awesome. Appreciate it. So, like I said, you literally took the market by storm. There was absolutely no knowing. When did you guys start, actually? 75 days ago, is that it?
Yeah, roughly
3 months ago we started. I joined 3 months ago. They've been development for a while.
Right.
So you guys have been working on for what, 9.5 months?
Yeah, so it's been a year Nick and I started working on, because like I said, he left the software industry, I left fashion, right, and we want to align our lives. So we said, he's like, let's commercialize the product.
We actually decided 1 week before our wedding that we were doing this full time.
Yes.
Yeah. 1 week before.
And from there we said okay, and Nick comes from a family that's been in the food industry forever. But I didn't know much about it. I just knew that I love food. Like I said, I was always in the kitchen. But we actually worked with McGill Food Science, their whole department there. And
how did you reach out?
We just reached out.
Just like literally emailed them? You cold called them?
Yeah, we're just like, we called McGill. We're like, hey, we're a new startup based in Montreal. We're looking for guidance.
Did you even have the packaging yet? Or not,
no.
Not even?
Yeah, nothing. We just want to speak with your professor, and see if we can just shoot the shit. And they were super interested in what we were doing. They called us in for a meeting, and we hit it off. And
I want to add, though, it took 3 months for that to get back.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But we kept.
We kept grinding, and we sent like two emails, and then finally, a TA, teacher's assistant, reached out to us saying like, "Hey, got this voicemail. Who's calling you back? Like, how can I help you?" And then 24 hours later, we were meeting with Professor. I won't mention her name because I signed an NDA, but we'll call her Professor.
She was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And the TA and the students.
Yeah, I mean, Lucas and Marika, we can mention them, they're in our videos.
Shout out Lucas, shout out Marika.
You guys are awesome.
They were a huge help, and I hope for them to be able to join our team, eventually.
Right. Yeah. Nice. And in terms of like actual action steps, because like you mentioned, like there's literally nothing, no framework that can give to entrepreneurs, and I feel that's a big reason why most fail.
Yeah.
So how did you, literally the question, like how did you sell 30,000 chocolate bars in 75 days?
So what people don't realize is to make a product that looks like this, with this boxing, with the whole thing, takes time. It takes effort. It takes perfection. And you need to be doing your market research. You need to be calling people, learning from people, listening, trying things, retrying them, not being okay with just good. You need to want great. And I think that's the difference, right? And the thing is, we worked on this a year before we launched it. We launched it, 75 days ago, in August 15th. And yeah, it exploded, but what went into it before was the hard work, And now, it's even crazier, but it's your groundwork that's really important,
I think that what's really important in my eyes is that, in all our eyes, is that we built a family from our customers. And I think us showing the love that we show and putting the effort into the customer has allowed us to, explode to that amount of bars being sold, because they're not just buying the bars, they're buying the life that we have with them. They're following the journey with us, and we're making sure they live the exact same thing. Like, whether it's Nick's going to Toronto today, he's going to show the journey with him, and they're going to follow his path. Whether it's her and I going up north tonight to discuss the pop-up shops we're going to do, they're going to live it through us. And I find that that family is so strong and has taken us to success. Obviously, the work that's been put into this is amazing, the foundation. But what we're building is a cult and a family for the lifestyle of Midday Squares.
Let's get into action steps, Let's get into concrete action steps. On my phone, I have the original packaging. I feel like we should show that.
Sure.
Let's get into that.
I think this is super important.
Yeah.
Cool. And actually, if you could dive into like how we create that culture. Because this is just a question of like doing stories or
transparency is very important.
Being real.
Authentic.
But it's everything. We show the good, the bad, the ugly, and the ugly gets ugly.
Okay.
But we're finding that the family really likes that, and they reach out to us, and it's not just answering stuff, people's messages, it's actually putting personalization to it and actually listening to what they say and responding. I've been in companies where I've seen the DMs, and it's a heart, it's just or it's like, love this.
Response.
It's an automatic response. I sit sometimes till 2:30 in the morning, going through the messages and actually understanding what the messages were from and actually giving them something that they would actually have value for, you know? If it's a question, I'll make sure I get the answer from one of them. If it's about the product itself, but we'll make sure it's deep dive and not just that it's good for you, you know? We'll go very into it.
Right.
You know, if they want to know a retailer, we'll give them the exact retailers in a distance of about a kilometer where they can
find them. Send them to a link.
Exactly.
Okay.
And once we're so against that, you know, and I think that it takes a lot more time, but the love they appreciate, and it's also we're appreciating the love that they're giving us in return, and it pushes us every day. You know, we get jacked up just from our customers.
Right, right. And you feel most of the hype has come just from people restoring you, or?
Well, I think we, you know, do you want to go back to the actual?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is for me a super exciting thing, and I would love for you guys to show it in the edits after, but this was the first ever iteration of this package.
And it was called Midday Cocoa.
It's called Midday Cocoa. And so the product was called Midday Cocoa. They're gonna actually throw it up on the screen after.
Yeah.
I'll send you the actual PNG.
You got it.
I'll send you the actual PNG on that. So I'm pretty different in my approach to how I believe businesses should be built, especially when building like brand type businesses. And it was funny. We have this guy that's starting to be known. His name's Daniel the intern. You know, he works here on Mondays.
Right. He's
the blog
guy.
Shout out Daniel the intern.
Everyone loves you.
Yeah, he's great. And in exchange, he's got an idea he's working on. So he comes in. He gives us his time, and then we all try to sit down with him in different areas that we're strong in and give him our time.
Nice.
And we just went through how do we get this thing to market. And so the idea is for me is, especially in food are very much like fingerprints. Palate's very much like fingerprints. They're very unique in the sense that what tastes good to you is gonna be different than what tastes good to her. And so I think the process is very intuitive. And if you don't go the intuitive process, you start to lose track. And so if we go to how do you get something to market, I always start with brand identity. Always.
Always.
Everything I've ever done in my life.
Before you ever even identify like the colors.
Yeah, it's just what is our name?
Right.
And when we were brainstorming the name at that point, I listened to a ton of podcasts, read tons of books.
Any podcasts?
So I started off heavily what got me into the podcast game was Tim Ferriss, the main stuff. Got a bit tired of it towards the end because, I don't know, I just
got a little longer.
Yeah, a little longer. But then when we got into the food industry, I listened to every podcast on BevNet. They have an incredible food podcast that just interview different brands on CPG. How This Is Built with Guy Raz, I love. Even what's his name talks, you know, he's super into psychedelics. Joe Rogan.
She doesn't like
it so much, but I love getting into some some deep Joe Rogan stuff. Kevin Rose is great too. And so in those podcasts, you know, I always fell in love with the story from 5-Hour Energy. And 5-Hour Energy was, he took his name and said, well, what the heck does my product do and what is it for? And just that's the name, right? It's like 5-Hour Energy.
Box Water.
Yeah, Box Water, all these companies. And so it was pretty clear, and I'm gonna say me and her, not to exclude him, he just wasn't part of the team at this time, because he was running his business. We just kept them going back and forth, and it was like, what do we eat this thing for? Well, every afternoon, I get a sweet tooth. Comes at around 1 p.m., I have this hunger crunch, and at this point, it was like, okay, so we know we want an afternoon name, you know? And then we're starting to play with afternoon, but the afternoon doesn't roll off the tongue so well, and then next thing you know, we come up with this thing called Midday. And then the second thing was, what was the product? And at that time, we were like so jacked up about chocolate that we were like, Midday Chocolate didn't sound so good, and we ended up at Midday Cocoa. And that's where the first product iteration comes. It's like Midday Cocoa. Yeah, Midday Cocoa, and we pump ourselves up.
Right.
And I think this is what I was telling to Daniel when we were speaking. I see a lot of entrepreneurs go through it. I've been through it in my life. Analysis paralysis. You end up wanting to plan everything, get as much information on everything, you get stuck, right. And then you never move forward. My thing, I think even our thing in this company culture that we've adopted, is just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Don't think too much about it. If it intuitively feels right, just move forward. And so Midday Cocoa fell right. We slapped it on, we got on Photoshop that night, and we made this package. And the reason why the package is so important is because it gives you excitement. And that excitement is what rolls over to the next day to allow you to charge forward into the next tasks that are going to be hard.
And I think that what people need to understand is every day you need to have one big thing, three little things to try to accomplish. And what you also need to realize as an entrepreneur is nobody really knows what they're doing. And as soon as you realize that, you start feeling a lot less stress. You feel more secure, you feel more confident to call somebody and ask questions. I think the biggest thing is, like Nick says, you always gotta go forward, keep taking forward steps, but you need to not be afraid to call a company. Oh, I'm looking for packaging. I go on Google, I start looking for a packaging company, I see 10 that come up, I get on the phone, I start calling them. Hi, I'm based in Montreal, I'm a startup, I do this, and this. I'm looking for packaging. I really don't know what I'm doing. This is my first time going at this. I need somebody who can help me, take me through it. And then you go through it. And then you call another company and you go through it. And then you start building quotes. That's what it is.
Iterating
exactly,
quickly.
Exactly.
But there's a method to the madness on iteration and creating. A lot of people, see, you can scale pretty quickly on anything that you want to do. If you have nothing, if you have zero experience on it, if you do it the right way. And what I mean by the right way is, all these experts in the industry, a guy that you call from packaging that's been selling packaging for 20 years is an expert in packaging.
Right.
Right.
And if you use him properly, he's going to make you an expert in literally 5 minutes. He's gonna come in here, he's gonna get you right up to speed. And you're gonna do what took him, let's say, 5 years to learn. He's gonna put you up to speed in 5 minutes. And he's gonna say, this is where you need to go next, or I can actually do this for you here. And if you stay open to that and keep following I call it the treasure hunt, you're gonna end up at what you want, like very quickly, without having any experience.
Because I guess a big fear is like, they're afraid to go down the rabbit hole, because like once you hit maybe packaging, it might open doors to like so many different options, and that's analysis paralysis. Right. And actually, I'd like to draw on the fine line between conviction and reiteration, because no one really knows what they're doing, like you mentioned. So just one step forward, but how do you take the time to iterate and say, are we actually doing the right thing?
It's trial and error.
I think
it's trial and error, and I think that as an entrepreneur, you're going to make mistakes, and if you're a good entrepreneur, you're going to learn from them. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing about entrepreneurship is not being the smartest, not being this and that, it's executing. It's getting up every day and executing. It's making, you know, like movement, steps forward. That's an entrepreneur. You have to be able to execute an idea to something concrete, you know? Everyone has ideas. I'm sure there's people creating this right now. There's a million people doing the same things that you're trying to do, but it's who's gonna execute it and who's gonna want it, you know, bad enough.
Who's gonna work the hardest and who's gonna do it better? And you know, putting care and love into it is a really big thing. And you know, I've made a ton of mistakes personally. And you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, I'm learning. I want to be on that learning curve at all times. You know, I ask them if they're more experienced in certain things. And you know, I'll take the hit, I'll fall. But if I don't get back up, I'm not an entrepreneur. But you know, and that's the biggest
thing.
That's
true.
You know, if you can't get back up, then you're not in the right industry. You should go do something else. And I think that us three as a team, and even the people that work with us, you know, in the front and the back, they all have that mentality. They get hit, and they're back up right after that. And, you know, you forget about what happened then, you go right away to there. You know, and that's a big thing with us three that's been a success, I'd say.
I want to touch on conviction and, what was the other word?
Reiteration.
You have to have, it's more art than it is science, in the sense that how naive you are has to be perfectly down the middle. So you can't be too naive, but you have to be naive enough to continue pushing forward. And being naive is in the sense of being too naive is not looking at what's actually happening in front of you. So you want to follow intuition, but not blind intuition. What do I mean by that? go to a grocery store. Simple. If you're getting into the grocery business, go to a grocery store. If you're getting in, and go just see the lay of the land. You know, we've heard this in many podcasts before. It's not new news. Go look at the lay of the land and find visually what's going to speak to you in that lay of the land. And if your conviction is right, you're most probably going to be successful. That being said, I think you have to take a risk on your conviction, because that's part of entrepreneurship. How you're successful in anything, not just entrepreneurship, investing or anything, is to take a right turn when everybody's going left. And if you choose right, you win big. If you choose wrong, you lose. So have that perfect amount of naivete to follow your intuition, but don't be stupid about it.
Right.
That's really what it comes down to.
Just to build on yours, a big thing that happened at the beginning, I don't know if you guys remember someone, or obviously the name, but told us to stop with the posting of being ourselves, like showing the, you know, our fun aspects to
That's a food business.
And you should be serious. You're gonna have buyers see it. You know what? Buyers love what we do. They tell us, you guys are different. We go into a grocery store, they notice us, and they're like, we just love you. And, you know, we didn't listen to that guy, even though he was experienced in another industry, smart person. We took it and we went with our gut. And I think that's another thing that we all do at the same time. We go with our gut, and it's been, you know, there's been times we're wrong, but a lot of the time we're right, and it's helped.
Yeah, and listening too. So like, to go back into iteration,
right.
10 hours before going to printing press, the original iteration of this was supposed to say deliciously guilt-free. It was not even gonna be.
Not bad.
Yeah, but this is what was happening. And then we'll even get into how we became Two Squares.
Yep.
And how the name, because this, there was four different names before we got to Midday Squares. Again, it wasn't sitting there for a month thinking about it. Every day we were moving forward. It was like, okay, Midday Coco's our name, that's our brand. 2 weeks later, new idea, we're still moving forward. And the brands continued, the packaging was evolving with names. It was very modular. But to get back to it, we were 10 hours literally before going to print press. And we had showed a lot of people. And I saw a lot of our male audience not, for whatever reason, connecting with Deliciously Guilt-Free. They just weren't. And then it took a woman, I was at Baton Rouge eating, a girl's eating next to me by herself, overhears me talking with my friend. Shout out Aria, love you. And he's like, you know, Nick, honestly, Deliciously Guilt-Free just doesn't make me feel like I connect to it. I feel it's feminized, and I just don't connect with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rattled by that. And then the girl said, excuse me, I overheard you. And she's like, you know what? I'm fucking tired of being told that I need to be worried about guilt when I'm eating product as a woman. I don't want to hear it anymore. I just want to eat the product because I like it. And so to now hear the female crowd react that way, it was like, I already had reservations about it because when we first came up with Deliciously Guilt-Free, we were high-fiving, like, we got this, this is the greatest, like, tag.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started fading from it, and I came home that night, I looked at her, I said, we can call it Deliciously Guilt-Free. She's like, I know what you're saying, like, I agree, and now we're stuck because what the hell did we put on this packaging? And that's where the intuition comes back to play, is what are we? What are we trying to achieve? Everybody in the market is trying to achieve another thing. We want to be known as the chocolate company. So what are we going to do? We're going to double down on that. And Made With Real Chocolate was born at that moment, 10 hours before going. Called up my art designer and was like, I need you to just figure out how to... Because the Deliciously Guilt-Free, by the way, looks so good on the packaging.
Right, I can imagine.
Yeah, so I'm just like, figure out how to make Made With Real Chocolate look just as sick. And she came back and she nailed it.
Nice.
She killed it.
Nice.
And so that iteration is like, it's constant iteration.
Right.
It never stops. You
do
know?
You put specific times, like in the morning, you all sit down together?
No.
No?
No. I think Mondays is very important.
Mondays, okay.
We all regroup on Mondays.
Yeah, we do a Monday morning meeting.
Lazy pizza.
But no, I wanted to just say one other thing about, you asked the success that we've been having.
Right.
So I think this is not my first entrepreneurial journey, I think product market fit is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot be fooled. You know, you can have a great product and entrepreneur, you can have a great business, you can have a great idea, and it can mean nothing. You know, and that I think is a scary thing. But when we launched this, it's like you we just had it. It was product market fit. The product, it was product market, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah,
and the branding and the entrepreneurs and the everything, it just fit.
Yeah, and you fit before, right? Before you actually
From day one, it just nailed.
Yeah.
And how do you know?
Because you just feel it.
It's a feeling.
I had always, I had always heard it before. So if you ask anybody in Montreal, then I would say a lot of people have seen us fail publicly, all of us. In different areas, because we've all started different things. And so it's no question that it's not like we just stepped up to bat and hit it.
Yeah.
Right? There's been a lot of pain and heartache for each one of us individually prior to this in different areas. And so I always heard that when you have product market fit, you don't have to ask, you just know. And I had always been like, what does that mean? and I can tell you what it means is we don't even remember launching this business.
Don't know what happened.
Yeah, there was like a picture We still don't know the story.
Still to this day, we can't give a straight answer because it was such a blur. And we went into dynamic pumping.
But product market fit is when your business is driving you and you're not driving the business.
Yeah.
So it's a bull, and your job as the entrepreneur is to stay on it.
That's interesting though, because we always say be a cause, not an effect. And now you're stating almost be an effect, right?
Yeah, essentially, because, well, I think it's a double-sided sword, what you just said, because you need to have what you said in order for the opposite to happen.
Right, because any cause has it.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So it's kind of, you threw the ball at the wall, and now you have to catch it because of the velocity of it coming back.
Right.
But if you never threw the ball would have never came back. So to that answer. But yeah, ever since that day, it's been a bull, and we've been just trying to ride it.
Nice. And actually going into retail now, so I remember a tactic that was used was when you're going to like apparel fashion retail is you go and you tell the retailer, hey, listen, try our products, we'll give them to you for free, then you pay people to go and buy it.
Yeah.
Example. How did you? You probably didn't do that.
No, but we got accused of doing this. Tell them the story of being accused of doing this.
So we're doing a test run in a very well known.
You can say it because we love
them anyways. Copper Branch. Love the place. So I go in there and I go deliver. I go to place the products usually. You know.
Shout out Jake, the delivery boy.
Anyways, long story short, I went in, delivered the goods there. The manager was super pumped. Got him jacked up, had fun. I said, it's gonna sell. I told him, I'm like, you're gonna be giving me a call later. And he's like, whatever. He's like, looking at me like I'm off the wall.
No one takes it seriously.
I come in a jersey, you know, like I look like a clown. He doesn't even understand what's going on. I get the product, I put it there. I go, I'll see you soon. Come back to the office, whatever. We had a good day so far. I think like 4 hours later, he calls me.
I'm sitting on the floor.
Nick's not on the floor. I don't know why, but no one was around but Nick was sitting there. I got a call and he's like, hello? I'm like, hello? I don't have the number, right? So I don't know who he knows. He goes, whatever. He says his name and he's like, so you sent your mom here to come get the
product? He's like, the manager called?
Yeah, he's like, you sent your mother to come get the product. And I said, what? I said, my mother doesn't chop a copper branch. She's never tried it. And he's like, you're sending people here. I'm like, what do you mean? So I started panicking. In my head, I'm like, who's calling me? Tell me I'm sending people. Because I'm not. I posted on social. Maybe people are going for my social. So I go to Nick. I go, Nick, someone's on the phone.
So I'm literally dead asleep on the floor in the deepest sleep. Because at this point, the business, we weren't sleeping a lot.
Right.
I was just so exhausted. He wakes me up and he just hands me the phone. So I'm like, Jake, what? He's like, just and I remember saying this, the Copper Branch manager speaking to me, I'm like, yo, sorry, dude, I just fucking woke up off the floor. Like, my brain is just getting, and he starts laughing on the other side. He's like, could you send me more packages or this or that? I'm like, wait, my brain's still not calibrated. Give me 2 seconds. So he's like, can I ask you a question? Did you send people in here to buy the product? And now I'm realizing what's happening. I'm like, oh, you think like we sent, because people do this, you know?
Yeah.
Is it common practice actually?
But a lot of people.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Lot, sure. Especially in fashion.
Right,
in fashion the most, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
especially in fashion.
Or people have fake reviews.
And so I'm like, no, dude, like, we just posted on our Instagram that we were there, but we didn't send. Those are all real people, you know? But so it's a funny story because you're absolutely right. People would do that, but we didn't do it in this case. And they were convinced that we did it. But then the owner, Rio, shout out Rio.
Shout out Rio.
Shout out Rio. I've got Upper Branch called us after, and he's a good cat, and he was like, he knew who we were. And I said, Rio, just go look at the videos we posted on Instagram, you know, like, it was real.
Yeah, and I just remember the moment when he said, you sent your mother. I said, what are you talking about, man?
Was it actually Rio?
No, it was the manager.
That was the manager.
I think it was West Island. West Island.
Carlos.
DDO, the DDO.
Oh, okay, no.
So anyway, it was just, I was shell-shocked when I heard it, so I didn't know what to, I kind of panicked, I don't know why, and at the end, whatever, we're now going to be there soon, so in the end, we...
It was good, yeah. But product market fit, man.
Technically, we send people. We make videos in the stores, so...
Yeah, but they're real customers.
They're real customers, it's people that are our family, in terms of cult, our following, not the family.
But
it's like, at the end of the day, it's just directing traffic. That's all we're doing. It's natural traffic, and we're just like air traffic control. So here's where you can go get the stuff.
Wait. And now, iterating, because, man, we could go on for hours. We could go on.
Yeah.
So many questions still left. But I'd like to iterate, lastly, on the fact that you mentioned entrepreneurs. It's like a big name you take on. It's like, it's an identity that is almost superhuman. And I guess a lot of people get intimidated by that, or like, well, I have imperfections. I'm not an entrepreneur, but I'm sure, like you guys mentioned, you have your own failures. Maybe could you bridge the gap between someone who's just starting, who has absolutely, they don't know what they don't know.
I say we do this. Why don't we finish? Because this is the final.
Right.
Our closing. Why don't we each talk about what entrepreneur means to each one of us, and why it should be an approachable subject for everybody.
Right. And maybe like any failures that you specifically.
Oh yeah, that's where I'm going to get on to.
So, Yasha, you can start.
Sure. I had a clothing brand called Hector Clothing. I worked on that journey for about 3.5 years. I learned a lot.
Pause.
Yeah.
She was hand chosen by Lady Gaga to design a full dress for her to wear on a 1 hour special for New York Times.
Yeah,
she never says that story.
I just don't.
It's the hottest thing.
Need
okay,
to preach.
Next,
you know? Anyways,
no, cool.
So no, I did have a lot of celebrities reach out actually, which was crazy because I didn't really do PR. I wasn't really in that world, but I was living in New York and traveling between New York, Hong Kong, and China. I did manufacturing and production, all these things. For clothing, but I did the biggest thing my biggest mistake with this journey was that I never wore the clothes that I produced. And I met the owner and designer of Chrome Hearts when I was in New York, and they're a major, major fashion clothing brand. And he told me he does not leave the house without wearing his clothes. And he's been doing that for as many years as he's existed. And he that resonated with me because it's like, why am I not wearing my own clothes? You know, if I believe in what I'm doing, my brand, I need to, the only person in the world that needs to like it is you and needs to wear it is you, because if you're wearing it and you're liking it, there's gonna be another person who's gonna wanna wear it and like it. And so I think that was one of my biggest mistakes. And I also reached for the stars too quickly. I had a lot of meetings with major retailers like Bergdorf Goodman, Neiman Marcus, Saks, Barney's. And these people didn't care that I was a startup. They destroyed me. They wanted samples within 5 days of meeting with them. They wanted things that drove me out of business. You know, as being an entrepreneur, you don't have excessive amount of money to do custom samples and custom color palettes and all these things. And so that put me in a negative, you know? Instead of going to smaller boutiques and like we're doing now and working my way up in terms of getting the customer to buy into what I'm doing and getting them to, you know, go into the bigger guys and say, hey, why don't you carry Hector clothing? And so if I had to do it all over again as a fashion entrepreneur, I would wear my clothes every single day as promotion, and I would start by winning the hearts of all the people in my own city, doing a lot more social, being myself on the camera, and starting from store to store and then building my way up to the department stores and so on and so forth. But what does entrepreneurship mean to me? It means, as an entrepreneur, the fun part about entrepreneurship is you get to do what you believe in, you know? Be who you are. And so I think for me as a dreamer, that allows me to have the opportunity, being an entrepreneur, I allow myself to have the opportunity to dream and to create and to build. And I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship. As much as how hard it is and how challenging it is, there's nothing more rewarding than being able to have an idea and make it into something concrete. And that drives me every single day.
Good. If we talk about accessibility, I'll touch on accessibility because it is an intimidating subject matter. No one actually knows what the hell they're doing, and I can tell you that because I've worked with some really big name entrepreneurs all the way down to little name entrepreneurs, and even those guys, I remember when I'd ask them something, they'd be like, man, you think we have this figured out? Like, we don't even have this figured out, you know? And two, just like in myself, you know, people are like, well, so like myself, I've battled consistently with self-doubt, depression, I don't like the word, but just highs, lows, and all of that, stage fright. I've gone to Toastmasters to work on all that.
Yeah.
And so like people think there's this like thing that they need to be in order to be an entrepreneur. You don't need to be anything. You just need to be an executor is number one. And at the end of the day, not be afraid to make mistakes. And I'm going to leave it on a story. I stole this story from Scooter Braun, the manager of Justin Bieber. Shout out Scooter Braun. It's a phenomenal story, and I think this is a perfect metaphor for entrepreneurship. So he goes, the New York Yankees basically are going to hold an open audition where you got to just come to the stadium and step up for bat. And it's going to be a packed stadium, so you're going to have 60,000 plus people watching. And anybody that hits a home run on their top pitcher is going to get a one-year contract with the New York Yankees. So he goes, that day, the news spreads, and everybody lines up to take a shot because it's free. And they're going to wait until someone hits a home run.
Right.
The first guy gets up to bat, swings, misses, and the crowd starts to boo. That guy drops his bat and leaves right away. Crowd boo. Second guy steps up to bat, swings, misses, crowd starts to boo. Stays though, swings again, misses. The boos get a little bit louder. By his third one, people are throwing stuff onto the field. He breaks and he leaves. The third guy comes up to bat and he sits there and the boos keep getting louder and people start screaming to the point where they're chanting, get off, but he stays in the pocket. And he keeps swinging and swinging and swinging. And by his 60th swing, he hits a home run. The next day in the paper, all that's written in the New York Times is that man hits a home run and signs with the New York Yankees. And he's praised by the city for hitting that home run. Nowhere in the article do they talk about the 60 misses and his ability to withstand the boos in the crowd. That's entrepreneurship.
Yes.
How many times are you willing to swing without being kicked off?
No, but it's very true because
I love
experienced
it.
That, you know?
What a story.
Yeah.
We missed our time. As for me, I'm actually opposite of her. You know, she was talking about how she didn't wear her stuff, right? In my previous business, which I failed with.
What was it?
It was a clothing brand, college clothing brand. I went to college campuses, pop-up shops. But the one thing I did do right in terms of, you know, success, I would say, is wearing my stuff and making people know that I'm so passionate about it in terms of loving it and, you know, wanting to wear it.
And built a big following.
And I built a big following, but I built it on the fact that I did exactly what she didn't do in that field. But on the other flip side, I had no execution organization. So for me, I was still an entrepreneur because I was doing something, I was doing what I loved. I found that, you know, doing what you love, you're gonna put your passion and you're gonna put energy. And I was working still. I would go on the road for 2 months, you know, and be out of home and, you know, be tired. I'd go kill it. But you know, the back of the business and my failures were taking over, and it was actually, you know, making me go from here. But I still never gave up. I never stopped. You know, it was 2 years. It was a year of hustling like that. I was exhausted. I had the flu. I had everything going wrong. I still kept going. And when I kept going, I learned. And now I'm in a new venture, and I've learned already. I'm already on my fourth month with you guys. And my execution and organization is slowly getting better.
Yes.
But it's not perfect, and it's never going to be perfect, but I listen, and an entrepreneur should always listen. And to me, I've learned from these two and others, there's many others, that have taught me what my failures are, and what my failures are, if I don't grow on them, I believe you can't be an entrepreneur. So to me, at the end of the day, if you want to be an entrepreneur, make sure to learn from your failures and actually understand them. Like, don't ignore them. Never say, oh no, I'm too good at it, it's never gonna happen. No, I was like that in my first venture, and that's why I failed. And today?
But would you say largely that if it wasn't for Chase Hunter, we probably wouldn't even be here today?
Yeah, so I gotta give credit to the brand, at least, like, some stuff still sells, I don't have to refund people, you know? But no, which, honestly, at the end of the day, I apply a lot of my skills from my past thing, you know, and I find that with relationships, I find with anything in life, you know. Anything.
You taught us everything for social.
No, I didn't.
You did. I swear, we wouldn't have the same social game if it wasn't for his Chase Hunter days.
But I think as an entrepreneur, it's very important to know your strengths and your weaknesses.
Exactly.
And you need to know them to be a good entrepreneur.
And I find that I'm still not there yet. And I don't think I'll be there for, you know, a couple of years, actually.
Right.
But I am taking brick by brick, and that's what's important. And, you know, we could discuss it, but we go see a business therapist. You know, try to go once every 2 weeks.
Yes.
But it's to work on the dynamics, and it's actually working on our failures that we have. And it's building from it. And, you know, we've already had one session, very successful.
Very.
Because, you know, you see all these good vibes only and bad, no bad vibes and everything. That is our motto here. It's
right.
Our culture. And if we don't work on that, I still
we're frauds.
Yeah, we're frauds. Exactly.
Yeah,
frauds.
We'll probably fail.
And entrepreneurship's about it is about failing and growing
Iterating.
From the failure. That's all it is for me. At the end of the day, ça suffit.
Guys, I have nothing more to say. This was awesome.
That was
thank
awesome.
You for having
me. Fuck yeah! How do we close this?
That's it.